Well, a popular uprising and a democratic revolution in Egypt having echoes across the Muslim Middle East. First to Iran, the opposition movement in Iran said it would hold a rally today in support of protests in Egypt and Tunisia, but the government there has banned those protests. Iranian authorities have poured police and militiamen into the streets of Tehran to challenge any pro-Egypt marches. And meanwhile, Iran's opposition groups say authorities have cut off the phone lines and access to the house of leader Hussein Mousavi and placed him under house arrest, ostensibly to prevent him from leading any pro-Egypt protest today. Joining us live from Tehran is the New York Times' William Yong. William, good morning.
Good afternoon. It's afternoon here, but good morning to you.
Good afternoon in Tehran. What are you seeing on the streets? Any signs of protesters this afternoon?
Well, there is the most notable thing I can say is there's a fairly significant police presence on the route, which is has been set for the protests. I have seen a small, or I rather heard, a group of protesters, perhaps no more than 100, shouting "God is great" in the park, and they were woken up pretty quickly, I'd say. That's been the extent of it. There's a lot.
Well, we seem to have lost William Yong on his line from Tehran, trying to recount at least some of the small protests that may be taking place there. Just to remind you, we have reports from opposition groups in Tehran that Hussein Mousavi, the opposition leader, is under house arrest, that his phone lines have been cut and communications have been cut off. That is from opposition groups there. Well, it's not just Iran, of course, across the Muslim Middle East. Protests in Iran today, of course, small ones, but over the weekend in Algeria, Bahrain, and Yemen. Is Egypt's revolution just the beginning? We have reports that the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank has dissolved the parliament there. Joining us is Stephen Kinzer, professor of international relations at Boston University. He's author of Reset: Iran, Turkey, and America's Future. He joins us now. Professor, good morning.
Good to be with you.
Well, we just heard a brief report before we lost the line there from Tehran that there are at least some echoes getting onto the streets in Tehran from the apparently democratic, we hope a democratic revolution in Egypt. To what extent now, I think we have to be careful with this, to what extent is Egypt a template for democratic uprisings against autocratic regimes across the Middle East? Surely Iran is not the same as Yemen, is not the same as Syria, is not the same as Jordan.
You're absolutely right. Naturally, there's a wave of fascinations spreading across that region with what happened in Egypt. But getting these things done is no easier than it is for you to maintain your telephone line to Tehran. There are a lot of people watching, and there are many forces in these countries that are deeply vested in the status quo. Things won't be the same for security forces in many of these countries and for ruling elites if there's a change of regime, and many of them are deeply worried about that. So I don't think this is going to be so easy to replicate. I do think that a lot is going to depend on how the Egypt situation unfolds. Most likely, we are headed now for a period of instability in Egypt. It's only logical over the next months that there'll be a lot of jousting for power. In which direction is Egypt going to go? Optimists would say we'd like it to go maybe in the direction of Turkey, that it would wind up being an open democracy with a capitalist economy and mainly pro-Western but very critical of U.S. policies in the Middle East. That would be the good option. The bad option, and everybody in the neighborhood is aware of this, is Iraq. There's no guarantee that Egypt is not going to deteriorate into a situation of a deep sectarian conflict and even violence. I think that before you start to see large movements like the one we saw in Egypt emerge in other countries, people are going to want to wait a little while and see how the Egypt situation plays out.
And that raises the question, Stephen. We are pro-democracy in this country, at least in the headlines. All of our rhetoric internationally is pro-democracy. It's a blunt question. Mubarak may have been a dictator, but he was our dictator. Do we really want the dominoes to start falling across the Middle East too quickly in places like Yemen, certainly, where we're working with the government to try to control al-Qaeda, places like Syria, which, while we don't have a good relationship, certainly stability there and a predictable government has major implications for the Israelis. Jordan's an ally. Do we really want a tornado of democracy sweeping across the Middle East?
No, but the question is, how can we contain it, and what can we do to provide some kind of an alternative? The United States has always been against democracy in the Arab world. And the reason was we were afraid that democracy would produce some kind of an Islamist alternative. There's probably some truth to that fear. We don't know exactly what Islamist alternative means. But at the core, a lot of this unhappiness in the Middle East has to do with anger at regimes that are supporting American policies in the Middle East, particularly American policies toward Israel, that most people in those countries find repugnant. As long as governments continue to support those policies and Americans push them to do that, those governments are going to remain unstable and the target of discontent. Right now, the challenge is for these governments not only to rush to try to meet some of these demands for more food and more jobs, but also to try to realign their foreign policy in the Middle East in ways the United States will find very unpleasant, but we might think this is less unpleasant than what might happen if we insist on pursuing the same policy, Israel pursues the same policy, and then more of these regimes that we've relied on begin to topple.
All right. Okay. But Stephen Kinzer of Boston University, there could be that this whole fear is overblown. I mean, it sounded logical when Eisenhower was talking about the falling domino principle, but it has never really played out that way in world politics. Each country is a nation in and of their own with their very unique challenges, and we're not going to see a bunch of Egypts all across the Arab world.
This is true. I do think, however, that one thing that binds together not all but many of the Arab countries is that people, especially younger people, are sitting at home and watching on their TV every night what is going on in the West Bank and in Gaza. They develop a hatred, a rage, a deep frustration, an anger, a humiliation that they're not able to do anything to help what they consider to be their cousins in Palestinian territories. That is a dynamic you see across the region. It has always been the view of the U.S. and Israel that this can be contained by regimes that receive large amounts of aid from the United States. And up to now, that's been the case. But you cannot rule out the foreign policy aspect of this, and particularly what that means is the Palestine aspect of this wave of protest.
Hey, Stephen, you know the one place that we haven't mentioned that nobody seems to be mentioning when they talk about Syria, Yemen, Bahrain, Algeria? What about Saudi Arabia? Are there any political institutions in Saudi Arabia that could possibly challenge the monarchy there?
I don't see some kind of a popular movement arising in Saudi Arabia. It's a thinly populated country. There's no big population centers. The regime there is the only kind of regime that people have ever known. And, of course, it has a certain amount of religious legitimacy, despite the notoriously un-Islamic lifestyles of many of the Saudi princes. I would think, though, that in the long run, the Persian Gulf is really the bigger prize for the United States even than Egypt. And you could spin out a scenario where if regimes come to power in places like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait that announce we are no longer shipping any oil to the United States, then the U.S. finds its vital interests touched in ways that even challenging Israel doesn't touch them.
Well,
and that will then present the U.S. of the bigger question of whether there are actually circumstances in the Middle East that would require or draw us to intervene directly there in order to prevent the takeover of certain kinds of regimes.
Thanks, Stephen. There may be an autocratic regime in Saudi Arabia, but there are autocratic regimes. Stephen Kinzer, professor of international relations at Boston University.
We are going to continue to follow events through the Middle East and give you developments as they come. If you have a reaction, and especially if you're an Arab American watching these events unfold from here at home, give us a call. Tell us your reaction and your stories at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm Todd Zwillick in for vacationing John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.